by looking at the prices that people pay for things, and obviously this is easier to do if there's a market than if there's not a market, we can place relative values on things, and we use the prices as indicators of relative value. Does the price mean anything? Not really. It just means something about how we're going to count stuff. But you do that all the time when you go to the grocery store, right? That's too much. I don't want that. Or you want that. That's a steal. I'm going to take two. So you can add those up to get a measure, a minimum estimate of the value. Yep.
Can I go back to opportunity cost?
Yeah.
Can you talk about it? You kind of alluded to there's opportunity cost for things that aren't priced.
Yeah, sure.
Could you give an example of that?
Yeah. How many of you like to hike? Okay. How many of you like to hear me more than you like to hike?
Your family.
All of you! No, every one of you. Every one of you, by being here, even if it was a mistake to come, have revealed by your choice that you thought the benefits of coming here and me for an hour were greater than the benefits of hiking. Right? It has nothing to do with dollars at all. It only has to do with the choices that you make. Okay? And economics is all about the choices that you make. Not about dollars and cents. If you want to do dollars and cents, you go to a business school.
But I did hike for 2 hours today.
Good. But you also came to my lecture, my class, right? So you have to go down here.
That was you.
I'm sorry. I heard this voice from before.
I threw it out there.
Yeah, so what didn't you do because you hiked?
I didn't go to a different class.
That's right. Yeah.
But it was twice as good an experience.
I know. Yeah, the third hour hike was less valuable. The first hour might have been more valuable. That's right. So you decided to divide it up. And of course, we do that all the time. Many, many things. And income is, there's many, many different things that go into this. Now, you can see how can we compare dollars of purchases in America to pesos of purchases in Mexico? Well, we need some way to convert pesos into dollars. But they do that at the airport, right? So you can use exchange rates to do that. Or if you're fancy, you can use something, purchasing power parity, which is you take the same basket of goods and services in the United States, and you see how many dollars it will take to buy that. And the same basket in Mexico, how much it will take to buy that. And then that gives you the rate of exchange between dollars and pesos. Okay? So that you can do this and add up a measure, which enables you to across societies to compare in a relatively meaningful way the quantities of goods and services that are being produced. It's not perfect, it has some faults. But it works. It works okay. It doesn't work great, but it has works on it. But for basic stuff, it gives us a handle on what's going on. And these kind of numbers are what enables us to be pretty confident about this rise in 1800. Okay. So when we look at a place like the United States, which has per capita income now of about $40,000 a year, and we look at a place like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which has per capita income of about $400 a year, right? So we're talking about a big difference, 100 times difference. What we're really saying there is that the quantity of goods and services available per person in the United States is 1,000 times greater. And we're adding the apples and oranges by using the prices that they do. And I'm not going to worry about prices from here on out. Just think about what economists would call real income. Why is a place like the Congo so poor and we're so rich? Well, you can think of lots of reasons there. They're having a civil war and all kinds of things that are going on like that. But if we want to look over time, it gets a little more complicated. Have we had a civil war? Yes. 600,000 Americans died in the Civil War? More Americans died in the Civil War than World War II, World War I, Vietnam and Korea put together? Big. Okay. Did it slow down our growth? No. I mean, it wasn't good. America grows at about 1.5% per year. That's per capita income. It grows at about 3-4% per year in total. So this is just the total income divided by the population. You got to do that. Right, because places have so many different populations. 1.5% per year per capita income will double roughly every 50 years. The rule of 72. So it says in 1800 and 1850, between 1800 and 1850 income doubled, between 1850 and 1900 income doubled, between 1900 and 1950 doubled, between 1900 and 2000 doubled. So how many times did it go up?
Does that represent your standard of living?
Yeah.
Or does that include inflation?
Forget about inflation because we got the prices in there.
Okay.
So I'm going to take out the prices.
All right.
It won't be inflation.
Okay.
Well, 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 4 is 8. 2 times 8 is 16. 2 times 16 is 32. So per capita incomes in the United States today are roughly 32 times higher than they were 200 years ago. The power of compound interest. That's why I should have started saving for my pension when I was 18 instead of 58. If we, one thing we could do, people, places like the Democratic Republic or the Congo are poor because they didn't have a lot of wealth and they didn't start saving early enough. Well, that's a problem because the Democratic Republic of Congo is a terrible place. I mean, I'm sure it's beautiful, but it's a dangerous place to live right now. And if the income goes down much more in the Democratic Republic of Congo, what's going to happen to people? They're going to die. They're just going to literally starve to death. $400 a year, that's 100 Big Macs, right? That ain't gonna get you through it all year. So it couldn't be that their income has been growing at the same rate as the United States, but it was just really, really low in the past. It's gotta be that they didn't grow for a really long period of time. And in fact, that's why I drew that graph almost positive up to 1800, because if you take the per capita income of people in 1800, which in today's terms in the United States would be about $1,000, and you start halving that every 50 years you go back in the past, you don't go back very far before there's not enough stuff for people to eat. So for most of human history, the rate of economic growth was very, very low. Almost zero. Until the last 300 or 400 years probably. Does everybody get the logic of that? Right? It's the bank. I know you don't have any money anymore. Right? How much money? If we know you don't have any more money today, we can make an inference about how much you've saved in the past, which is zero. Because if you had saved, it would have grown. Right? So we know that income in the past, it wasn't flat like this, but it went like this. For every up, there was a down. And in fact, when we go to look at poor countries, even in the world today, even over the last 50 years, we see, and I'm going to give you these numbers. Apologize for that. But sometimes numbers are really important. So look at countries with greater than $20,000 in income, less. There's two things that are going on. One is that there's how fast you grow when you're growing, and then there's how often you grow. So would you expect developing countries to grow faster or slower than the United States when they're growing?
Faster.
You guys are smart. I don't need to teach you anything. Yeah. In fact, what happens is that we look across, when we think about the percent positive, that is the number of years, the share of all years that income goes up from year to year. And the richest point in the richest 27 countries, the percent positive is 84%. And the rest of the world is 66%. So that account, even if they had the same growth rates when they grew, the fact that these guys grow in roughly 7 out of 8 years, and these grow in 2 out of every 3 years, means that income is going to grow over time faster. The growth rate, that's too small for you to see. So the positive growth rate when they grow for the rich countries is 3.88, and for the poor countries is 5.85. This is for total income, not for cash. So you can see that the rich countries grow more slowly, and when they shrink, when this is negative, the rich countries shrink at minus 2.3% per year, and the poor countries shrink at minus 4.9%. The real difference between rich countries and poor countries, and within the developing countries, the difference is how often you shrink and how fast you shrink. So we take the group that's $300 to $2,000. These are all in 2,000 American dollars. So they've been adjusted, right? They're not, we don't have to worry about inflation and price.
Okay.
These guys only grow in 56% of the years. When they grow at 5.37, which is just about what other countries do. But when they shrink at 5.38. Right? So they shrink just as fast as they grow. And they only grow in 56% of the years. That's why they're poor. Poor countries are poor not because they grow slowly, although obviously over time they do grow slowly. They grow slowly because they have so many episodes of negative growth. And when they grow, when they shrink faster than rich countries. And they shrink faster than the middle income countries, the poor that are not quite so poor. Yeah?
So when they grow, are we to assume that when they're not growing, they're shrinking?
Yeah.
Or okay.
Yeah, zero is
steady.
No.
So it's either one or the other.
There's one or the other. Zero is classified as negative in this count. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, but what if somebody comes and steals half of the 20,000?
That's called negative growth. Right? Oh, look, let's say you're Saddam Hussein. You know, you run the country, and you take half the money you're stealing from your citizens, and you put them in these grand palaces, you take the other half and send it to Switzerland. What happens to the capital stock of this country? It goes down. Their wealth goes down, and therefore their income goes down. Right?
Similarly, if an international corporation comes in and takes away the resources.
That's trickier because they probably pay for the resources.
Not
in
the Congo.
Yeah, well, the Congo's a real problem. There's three armies involved in the Congo.
Oh, but in the old days in the Congo.
In the old days in the Congo, yeah, the Belgians.
Yeah.
Prince Leopold. Yeah, they were taking stuff out. There's no doubt about that. And probably it's the case that colonialism was not particularly good for Africa. It's not clear it was particularly bad for Africa either, by the way. What did it do for the United States? I went to India. My wife and I were in Delhi. Driving around, it was like January 25th. I think it's the 26th or the 27th of January is their Independence Day from Britain. And the taxi driver, it was like 2 in the morning. Because in India, airlines that are not owned by the Indian government can only land between 11 at night and 3 in the morning. So if you've ever flown to India, you got there in the middle of the night. Okay. And he's driving us around, he's saying, well, he was really excited about this. And we said, yeah, you know, we became independent from India on July 4th. He said, where are you from? To the United States. No, he never became independent. You were always independent. I said, oh, no, there's a little history here. Right? So Africa's not poor because they were a colony, although that's part of the problem. Right? Are there still resources left there?
Yeah.
Okay. They're poor because they have a problem ordering their society. And particularly important to understand is that their society breaks down with a much higher frequency. That, as if you're an economics major as an undergraduate or graduate student, what you learn about is a model in which the growth rate is higher or lower, given certain kind of conditions. But the growth rate is always steady. And in fact, that's not a very good description of the way the world works. The problem is, in poor countries, and in all the countries with less than 20,000, think about Mexico. Mexico is a fairly high-income country in the developing world. Does it have a problem with violence? Big problem with violence. And they're worried that it's going to get out of hand. Okay. You ever read Federalist Paper No. 10 at Madison and Hamilton? The Federalist Papers, what were they most worried about? Civil War. They were worried that factions would cause civil war. Because in the world that they lived in, that happened all the time. Was the last king of England who was beheaded before or after there was a colony in America? After. Okay. That wasn't ancient history. That's American history. So this the problem of social breakdown, of these negative growth experiences, is in fact why poor countries are poor. They're not poor because they stay at zero and just flatline. That's not what happens. They grow rapidly and they shrink rapidly. And the trick to getting rich is not to grow faster when you grow. It's to cut down on the number of negative growth experiences. Now, that's a simple economic way of thinking about it. But it's a powerful insight into the fact that when we look at these societies, we need to be addressing how stable they are, how they work out arrangements internally that produce positive outcomes or negative outcomes. Yeah?
Doesn't an uneven distribution of income lead to unrest?
Maybe. But you got to make a bunch of assumptions to make that argument go through. Okay. Does anybody know where the most unequal distribution of income in the world is? What continent? Pick continents. There's only seven options. You got one and seven. Latin America. Okay, Latin America has extremely unequal distributions of income. Where's the most equal? Asia. Okay. Now, there's a lot of countries in Asia with fairly equal distributions of income that aren't growing very fast. Okay. Now, there's a trick in that question. If you only have one rich person and everybody else has the same income, you have a very equal distribution of income. Right? Okay. Is American distribution of income becoming more or less unequal over the course of the 20th century? Gotta be careful. I'm an economic historian. It was getting more unequal to World War II. It was becoming more unequal. It became more equal until the middle of the 1970s, and it's become more unequal. So at the end of the decade, end of the century, it's not that much different from what it was at the beginning. So there's problems. There's clearly, when we talk about inequality, and the inequality that really matters in terms of the stability, is probably not economic, it's probably political inequality. In most societies, politics is economics. So the fact that they have an equal economic outcome reflects the inequality in the political system, not the outcome that you get from a marketplace. In our society, it's not reasonable to expect that the equality of income will stay constant. It's going to go up, it's going to go down. And it's not clear that when inequality is rising, that things are getting worse. Although there are obvious differences in what happens. I have two sons, graduated from college 3 weeks ago. Does it matter they graduated this year rather than 3 years ago? Yeah, big time for them. They're going to be more unequal. They're going to be born in the wrong cohort. Turns out they were born 3 years apart, they graduated the same year. How unlucky is that? Now, those are really important questions about the structure of society and how it works. Inequality is an important part of this. And remember, when we talk about this, and I'll come back and reemphasize this because it's time for us to go, is that modern economic development is also modern political development. There are no places that are economically developed that aren't politically developed. Sometimes it's the economy, economic development pulls the political stuff along, and sometimes it's the political stuff that pulls the economic along. But they both happen. And so we want to think about inequality as a cause or a consequence is a difficult question. Because politics is often a source, the underlying politics is often a source of the underlying inequality. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. Okay? More questions? Great. See you tomorrow, or maybe not.